Just one other point, and I'll call on you. And another one that's done this to break up the old-time religion is, professional mobility. One reason the old-time religion could thrive was that people belonged to the church year after year, decade after decade, their whole lives. Now, for instance, if you're a young entrepreneur or somebody in professional, and your company says that if you want a promotion, you move to Denver and you have to leave Wichita or whatever it is, you have to go and you have to start life all over again. And you can't hold on to the old traditional ways if you're being transferred every 5-10 years. And I'm sure some of you who are pastors here know of what that does when you get a really good leader and something else, and suddenly she or he has to go. And that breaks up a lot of the continuity, because one reason the old-time religion thrived was because of that. And that comes out of changing needs in America at this time. Sure.
I was just curious, when Fulton Sheen was on in the 50s, didn't people that weren't Catholic listen to him?
I'm talking about him on Thursday.
Are you?
Right. I'm talking about those eyes. Remember those eyes?
Yeah.
This is not CLG. Young ones wouldn't know, have any idea what I'm talking about.
It was,
and remember, there was sort of a big statue in the back, and Catholics would understand this to be the BVM or the Blessed Virgin Mary, and they were happy with this. And Protestants say, well, it doesn't look like the Blessed Virgin to me, so I don't have to believe that it is. And there was still this hostility between those. But he was one of the important people who brought television into religion. But I think this one is very, very important, the mobility thing, because you can no longer have these Irish parishes in New York or Boston and all the rest. Oh, my favorite example there is in Detroit, Hamtramck, which is an old, solid, old Polish ethnic community. 50, 60 years, hardly anything changed. And I think they put out the third largest Polish newspaper in the world. There were so many at Hamtramck. And anyway, then they ran into all the difficulties, especially the financial difficulties. And like in Chicago and all the rest, the archbishops had to come in and shut them down, or could shut down the parishes. And CBS picked up on this, and it was Dan Rather, or maybe it was one of the others. But anyway, they interviewed an older woman in Hamtramck, and about how she felt about her church being closed. And she said, well, she understood why it had to be, but she was really going to miss the one thing more than anything else. She was going to miss her Friday night Polish bingo blessing. And that was very important to her, because that was simply built into the whole system. And that was no longer going to be the case, because now there wasn't going to be a Polish bingo blessing anymore. There's going to be maybe an Italian bingo blessing or some other corruption that comes along. And I think that's extremely important. Okay, we're approaching the time on this. And another one I helped bring it down the old time religion is the end of the Cold War. We no longer had a common enemy. We no longer could say that, well, like we did in World War II or during the Cold War, that we have to stand together, because we've got those Ruskies out there, or whoever it is, and they're going to, pretty soon, if we don't stop them here, they're going to start sailing in under the Golden Gate Bridge and, take over, and all those things that we believed in. And we never realized, and even the CIA was wrong on this. It was amazing that even the CIA didn't realize that the Russian experiment was going to collapse as quickly as it did. Just amazing. We spent all those billions and billions of dollars at the Pentagon, and they missed that one entirely because we never picked that one up. But the Cold War meant that the entire focus of the country now, or almost the entire focus, would be on domestic policy, and that we would no longer need the enormous, we no longer need the huge amounts of money for armaments. What was it they called it? The peace dividend? Wasn't that the term that was used when the Cold War ended? And now that we have all this money coming in, we should be able to use that money for peace things rather than for our XB-2s and...
Yeah, it lasted for 1 year.
It lasted for a year. Right, and whatever happened to the peace
dividend? Then we found enemies.
We found enemies, the Bosnians and other people that keep me awake at night worrying about this. But I think that meant that there was that much greater opportunity for deviating, if you want to put it that way, even further from what the old-time religion had really been like. And I think the last one, and we'll talk about this in specific cases, would be some of the major struggles that are going on now with the Episcopalian Church, the Methodist Church, the Presbyterian Church, the Lutheran Church, over sexual identity. What's taking place? I follow the national conventions. And this year, within the Methodist Church, the National Convention, and within the Presbyterian Church, there were major, major battles over ordination of gays and homosexuals and lesbians. Just, nasty, awful battles. There was one fellow who was going to be re-elected as the, they call him the elder, the presiding elder. That's the term for the boss in the Presbyterian Church. And he made a sort of an ambiguous statement that wasn't clearly acceptable to the people, and within one day, he was out, and they brought in somebody else. Strange sort of thing. But then at the same, just to give you an example of how complicated it is, they voted against ordaining homosexuals, and they, and at the same convention, they voted in approval of same-sex marriages, which some people are trying to figure out. If any Presbyterians are here, want to come forward and explain that one to me. And the Methodists voted down ordination of homosexuals again by about a vote of about margin of about 200 people. But in a way, it's like the abortion thing. There's no way you can compromise this. And what's obviously very clear, and to the great dissatisfaction of many people, is that it's not going to go away. Some people seem to think that it might go away if, you know, like the ostrich threw the head in the sand. But it's not going to go away. And it means that the old-time religion, with all its loyalties to right and wrong and good and evil and all the rest of these things, simply doesn't have a prayer, I think, of a chance any longer in, you know, the world we live in now. And where we go, obviously, it'd be fun to talk about, but I'm a historian, so I deal with the past instead of the, you know, the future. And that's one cop-out, isn't it? But I'd be glad to talk about that. There's a lot of good stuff, what they call futurology. But one last thing, I think if there's any trend that I've seen in watching in Minnesota and Arizona and California and some other places, is the, within the Lutheran Church, we have, what is it, 65 synods, that there is increasing sort of satisfaction with developing your own geographic style of Lutheranism. And Pennsylvania Lutheranism is a long ways away from Community Church of Joy Lutheranism in Phoenix. And Southern California Lutheranism is a long ways away from Kenyon, Minnesota Lutheranism. And nobody seems to mind that. And that there seems to be a willingness with downsizing, decentralization, and all the rest of this, simply to accept, you know, your particular place and not try to do as we did in the 1960s, reach some sort of national consensus on this is what a Presbyterian should be, or this is what a Methodist should be. And a very good example of that would be the collapse of the National Council of Churches. We have all kinds of enthusiasm. We build the big God box, 475 Riverside Drive. Eisenhower goes up there and he doesn't sprinkle holy water on it, but he sort of blesses it and does all the rest of these things. And it started off with a huge budget and all sorts of enthusiasm. This is what we are going to do on the national level. And now it's almost a joke because it has misspent money and but basically lost the loyalty and enthusiasm of a lot of people. Now they're even renting out over half of the National Council office building now is rented out to non-religious, non-church-related organizations. And it's a suggestion, what I'm trying to say, it's an example, and I'm using Randall Bulmer on this, who teaches this course at Columbia and at Barnard, is that it's an example of the dreams of the old-time religion, you know, getting started in the 50s with Dulles, and with Eisenhower and all the rest, and simply for the reasons that I've talked about here, and some others I'd be glad to get from you, have no longer have any viability. I saw a hand in the back here.
I was thinking that once you're mentioning mobility, I would think that would interact with the local flavors, that if one person moves from one flavor to another flavor, they would pretty soon they'd mix up and maybe end up with some one kind of thing.
Well, what's happening there, in a way that's true with the evangelicals, they aren't, you know, denominational loyal, I guess that's the way of putting it. You find the fastest growing churches, and I'll talk about this on Thursdays, are these ones, you know, the Edina Community Church Center, and it doesn't have a label like Presbyterian or Baptist or anything like this, and those are the ones that are growing, you know, the most rapidly. These huge things out on the edges of town, 15,000 members, these big buildings, and you see them on TBN, that Trinity Broadcast Network, and all the rest. Those are the ones, and the people can move very easily from one to another because they aren't, you know, necessarily committed to any one denomination. And so what holds them together is sort of a bland, vague,
feel good
religion, yeah. Warm fuzzies. Right.
There's a good article in August Atlantic Monthly about what they call the mega church.
Yep. Yeah.
And there's about, I don't know, 6 to 10 of those,
yep,
two of them in my area that they talk about. It's
yeah,
an interesting phenomenon based on another thing you talked a minute ago community-related.
Right.
And
I know that piece, and I've been trying to get a hold of it, and it hasn't come yet here. We take the Atlantic here, and I'm going to get, you got it?
Yep.
See me after class. Right, I really want to see that one very much, so, because we see, you know, we see it down in the Phoenix area, the mega churches. The biggest one there is Tommy Barnett's First Assembly. That's where the ones where they have the big Easter spectacle, where they have
it's great. All the angels run out of the cage.
Camels and chariot races. I don't mind that. You know, you have to get people in the church some way, you know, right, and so on. But they have Jesus ascending, you know. And just, he goes right up. I'm sorry, folks. I can't quite handle that one, but maybe I'm being judgmental on this. So anyway, it's time for Vespers, and I hope you show up tomorrow. Okay.